G'day everyone. Proud to say Bar Karate is brought to you by Radix Nutrition, makers of the most technically comprehensive nutrition products that have ever existed. Unlock your potential with Radix. G'day listeners, welcome to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. My name's Jordan Spencer, and it's that time of the week where we get to hang out with some really cool sailors, but of course I have to share the mic with my two idiot mates. First off, Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
BP.
G'day all, how is everyone today? Well, here we are, we're having a chat. It's Saturday night, I've got the luck of the draw, it's a nice time for me.
Well done. For you. Yeah, we thought of you.
Yeah, I know. After I complained, had to pull it back an hour because it was well into my Saturday evening festivities.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we're a caring bunch. Hang on, let's bring in the other bloke who's not so caring.
He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr.
Mr. Nick Pice.
Sharing's caring, gents.
Sharing is caring, gents.
I'm current location Antigua in the Caribbean. Whilst it's Caribbean man. I turned up to work on the first day with one of those, you know, the rasta.
Did you do it? Did you do it?
Yeah, and the dreadlocks.
And a Walkman.
No, not really. No, it's very professional. Very professional, the role here. And I've got one for it, which, so I'll turn up. I'm sailing on the Maximus, 59-meter catch. Brand new, pretty much. This will be its first regatta coming up in St. Bart's. Turn up, and then the captain is like, oh, we've got something a little strange coming up on Friday, which was yesterday. We're recording this on Saturday, Sunday for you. So, yeah, we're doing a burial.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, scattering the ashes and stuff. No, an actual burial at sea.
Wow.
So, a guy, a Kiwi guy who's been in Antigua for quite a long time with Antigua Rigging, Stan Pearson, passed away. And we literally went out a box on the back of the boat with a bit of a tippet, tipped him over.
Right.
It was quite a real experience.
It's a real experience.
So I'll walk you through it. The hearse pulls up down on the dock. We hoist him on board, spreader bar, blah, 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 halyards, get him to the back of the boat where the tipper is, take the boat out, and because it's Antigua Super Yacht Race Week or something like that, all the other big boats were basically came alongside us. We're about 6 miles offshore.
And like we just a big Hawaiian up, surfing circle.
Motored up to this particular place, and yeah, and then there was a bit of a few people said a few words on the VHF, and send him over the back.
Wow.
Off he goes.
It was, there you go. Yeah, real strange. And,
is that allowed these days? I wouldn't have. Apparently, exactly. You can have what you want.
Blew my mind. But as we left the dock, he's obviously a very well-known guy. I didn't know him, but many people did. And a bit of a salute as we left with nice everyone on the horns of the boats. And as you can imagine, she's big boat heaven here. In the sense that, yeah, and they've got some big horns, let me tell you that. So, but yeah.
Righto.
Rather strange. Then
welcome to Antigua, Nick Bice.
Correct. Straight into it. And then, we get the boat to St. Bart's tomorrow for the St. Bart's bucket. Getting ready. 35 boats. Super yacht's going to be milling around the place. So,
I hear your
strap on the wallets.
I hear your boat captain. After the ceremony, did you just get straight into it and go for a quick sail?
Yeah, would have liked to. You need about 4 hours to do that, though. all good. So,
all right, we'll talk more about that later, then.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm.
All right, should we bring in our guests? Plural?
Yep.
Might as well. It's okay. Beautiful.
Yeah, very cool. Interesting, this one. This one we've been sitting on for a little while because we wanted to time it perfectly.
Is that what we did?
Yep, 100%. I do a lot of work behind the scenes, PP. anyway, so there was a lot of interest. There's a lot of interest with this pairing because a lot of people have been watching them renovate an old TP52. So they've created what they call their racer cruiser, and it's fully powered by renewables, which is great. So we've got a boat that has got a joint use. It's been repurposed, you know, and we love that element. That was something we talked about a lot in the boatyard, Bicey, and I think, BP, we've had this banter too about reusing boats is the most efficient way of actually being environmentally friendly rather than throwing them on a tip heap. Powered it fully by renewables, did all the work themselves. They got a lot of attention from doing that. At the same time, of course, they run their charity, which is Ocean Crusaders. So they're not only are they doing all this work on boats.
Walking the walk. They're talking the talk.
Talking the talk. Walking. They're doing it all.
And walking the walk.
And cleaning up the oceans. And now they actually cruise around racing it as sort of for fun, but also as a venue for communication. Even more importantly, Tomo, the male in this conversation, is what we call a regular-sized human being. So that's good. We're finally into normal proper sailing people.
Normal territory.
Normal territory. And, you know, they're doing a power of work and they've actually come up with a whole new scheme with the sailmaker, which is going to be quite interesting as well. So it's an important discussion. It's an interesting one because a lot of people want to go cruising and trying to work out how to do it. And making your own boat out of a racing boat is something that is very interesting for a lot of us older racers. So welcome, Annika and Ian, Tomo Thompson to Bar Karate. Great to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Awesome. You guys, obviously, both well-known professional skippers up in the sort of northern Queensland area. You float around, you know, you're all up and down the East Coast. Everyone sort of knows you guys. Tell us about quickly your path into sailing. Were you guys born into it or, you know, did one convince the other? I figure you picked each other up on charter yachts or something is how I figure you two got together.
You know it all too well, Jay.
We did. I'm from Sweden.
You're from Sweden?
Yeah.
So I'm from the West Coast, just south of Gothenburg in Sweden. And you know, you it's sailing everywhere. You either ski or you sail. Or if you're well off, you do both. But I just did sailing. So they've moved here when I was 28, landed in Ely Beach on a Tuesday, went sailing on a Wednesday, and that was it. Worked up there with sailing and diving, and then a couple of years later he got there. This is the funniest story ever because, yes, I was nicknamed Angry Cap there before I got a coffee in my Don't Talk to Me in the morning. And we actually worked together for 4 years and I could stand about 20 minutes.
Hated each other. Couldn't stand each other.
Like two magnets accidentally sitting the wrong end of each other.
Yeah. Well, I always say that, you know, I used to come on and take the boat off her. She'd do two trips a week and I'd do the third one to fix the boat and clean the anchor chain that she'd take from Nara and the mud on it. And, it was quite amusing. But, eventually I went off working up in Townsville for a while and in a place called Lucinda. Not too many women there. And when I came back, I found this, went out to dinner with some friends and Annika was there. And I was trying to slap myself going, gee, she looks all right. And anyway, we got together.
Never really looked at her before.
I thought, Annika, you were going to say, and on the Wednesday night, got invited to see the turtles coming in Ely Beach. That old trick.
I love it.
Yeah, my sailing career started as a windsurfer. I got into windsurfing, played cricket through my junior career, and every summer we went down to Balnarring, and my uncle had an old windsurfer, so I learned to windsurf and ended up running Sailboard Headquarters down at Sandringham for quite some time. And got into yachting purely because we used to run these tours to Maui and Fiji. And in Fiji, I took this photo of our other instructor. In the background was this yacht. And I'm like, man, imagine running windsurfing tours off a yacht in Fiji. That'd be wicked. So I eventually did it. So, and then got into yachting. I bought a 51-foot Beneteau, my first boat. Wow. Sailed to Fiji and ran windsurfing and kitesurfing tours.
Wow. That sounds like you sound like you're living the life I was supposed to live.
I don't think we'll be talking much about the Jaybird. Let's continue this discussion.
Oh. No, well, actually, we came back because the liver needed me to come back because we're just drinking too much, eh?
Yeah, that's it.
They say the carb is meant to be good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. When you have hallucinations in the middle of night of whales swimming next to you and tigers riding on their backs, you know you've had too much carb.
Yeah, because you know there's no tigers up there.
Oh, isn't there? I'm sure I saw one.
Hey, Annika, I'm interested because obviously being Swedish, you know, and coming to Airlie Beach, which is, you know, it's for those who've never been quite to common. That part of Australia, it's incredibly beautiful. And it's, you know, lots of little islands surrounded by there, you know. Did anyone just say you've got to be careful out here navigating because of all the islands and you just, well, hang on, I'm Swedish. I've got 250,000 islands I can dodge, you know. Like, did that conversation ever happen?
Of course it did.
Oh, really?
Of course it did. I was actually very, very lucky. I had very good mentors up there and it was a good society to get into. Like, waters are so different in Australia to Sweden. We don't have tides there. We have currents.
Yep.
And as you say, you don't. I'm born up with sitting with the chart in my lap.
Yep.
And you navigate island to island. Here you, yeah, you don't have to do that so much. It's a little bit less to navigate, but the currents and the tides and everything you have to. So it was different, but yeah.
Sorry, Tomo, just quickly, can I just on with Annika, when you were over in Europe and you decided to make the decision to come to Australia, first of all, how did that happen? And did you know of Airlie Beach and choose Airlie Beach because of its you know, what it was, what it's for? Or was it by accident?
No, I very flowed in my life. So I decided to come to Australia because I love diving and also wanted to be better at kitesurfing. I have relatives down in Sydney, landed there, was there for 2 weeks and said, no, this is too cold. And my cousin had his wedding honeymoon up in Hamilton Island and said, go up there, you're going to like it. So okay. I flew to Airlie Beach and I stayed there for 9 years.
Yeah. It's got that about it.
It is truly.
Yeah, 9 years. Although 9 years of Airlie Beach is a long time. I did a few long term trips to Airlie Beach and
mate, 9 days in Airlie Beach is not too good for the liver. 9 years.
No, six months was my maximum, but
you have to know how to get out, and I did do a stint on the white boats in the Caribbean as well, and worked up in Cairns. So it's one of them places you go off and do your work on other boats, and then you come back and you always have work, and then, a little bit of a base.
Cool. So, all right, so you guys worked together, hated each other's guts, then went out to dinner, got on the grog, and, you know, got the eyes on for each other. Like, how did that evolve? Like, was that a conversation where you talked about going on adventures together or doing all this sort of ocean crusade stuff, or was it just... you know, Aussie, oh, look at that big Aussie bloke and look at that hot little blonde Swedish chick. Is that how it went?
Well, she was sailing on a boat called Wild Thing, our boss, Keith Roberts. So there is actually a video out there, Swedish blonde does the Wild Thing or something like that. But just be careful with what you see when you look that up. Our boss always thought we'd get together, but we never did, but... Yeah, when we did, we did a bit of sailing on 11, the Far 40, together. But then, yeah, it just kept growing. And, yeah, eventually we decided that we both wanted to leave Airlie Beach and probably go over either Darwin or Western Australia. So we jumped in the van and off we went.
Wow. Adventure City.
Let's talk about the Whitsundays, because obviously that is where it sort of all started, okay? So let's go back. Pre-marital and pre that sort of area, when you're sailing, it's given you an eye view or a vision of the actual industry. It's huge, you know. There's a lot of things going on. What was it that sort of ticked at that point that sort of said, you know, there's something going on here. This industry is, you know, we can do something here.
Question. It's just a good lifestyle because you're sailing and you work on the water and you're always in the element. So that's where, and for both of us having that interest, passion about the ocean. I literally get sick if I go inland more than 50K. I need to be near the blue bit. So it was not really an option. It's just a good playground and all that.
Yeah, for me, it all started to change pretty much when I started pulling dead turtles out of the water.
Yeah, right.
You know, okay,
this is my point.
Normal size human, rather large, strong Aussie, tough Aussie bloke, as we call ourselves. And, you know, just kept pulling these dead turtles out. And, right. Now, the first one I ever pulled out was stuck in a crab pot.
Okay.
And, you know, like I was just coming back from the island and saw this thing floating and thought, what the hell's that? And there was this beautiful little turtle, like, drowned in a crab pot. So we took that in, gave it back to parks, and over the next 8 years, I pretty much pulled in another seven turtles, and three of them had died because of plastic. So I actually wanted to do something about it, and you know I didn't really know how to do much, so decided to go for a small yacht around the country, just to raise awareness for what plastic bags were doing to our world.
Mm.
You know, our convenient plastic bag, which we use for on average two minutes, was killing these beautiful creatures that should live for 200 years. Mm. So I wanted to tell everyone about it. So got nicknamed the Plastic Bag Boy for a while then, as I sailed around the country, and raised that awareness and ended up using that to go and educate kids. And but yeah, sailing's sort of something that, you know, we live the ocean, we were working on it, it was everything to us, and we just wanted to protect it.
That's pretty intense. So what you're referring to with around the world is obviously around Australia was when you did that solo around Australia. I think you've still got, have you still got the record for the loop around Oz on a monohull? Is that right?
I guess it's unofficial because, like, I did have to stop, so non-stop unassisted.
Yep.
So blew a fan belt coming across Bass Strait. And
nothing worse than blowing a fan belt.
Tried to replace it with one and it was petrified and didn't have any pantyhose on board, so couldn't fix it. Had to pull in, and it was just a safety thing. Being a commercial skipper,
yep,
you can't sail the East Coast without navigation and electronics, especially when
I thought you were going to say you can't sail the East Coast without pantyhose.
Well, you know,
depends what time of year it is if you're jipping in.
Maybe that's why we're not winning races.
Well, and lucky I wasn't running the brisket at that time, Tomo, because you never know. You could have dropped into Adelaide, dropped in for a brisket. That
would have been quite a diversion from where I ended up. But, probably wouldn't have got as far if there was a brisket on offer.
Yeah, that's it. So from this, obviously, that led to Ocean Crusaders. You guys do it's the clean-up element where you basically you've gone from just plastic bags to everything that's in the water, pulling it out. So that's a pretty noble effort. And we're interested in this, you know, like I think Ian Kiernan was the first. He started out when he was doing his circuit around the world and he sort of noticed all the rubbish in the water, started that Clean Up Australia movement, which has gone global. Now you're actually physically, that's what you guys do. Ocean Crusaders physically are cleaning up the waterways. That's basically the purpose. Is that correct?
Yeah, we got married over in Sweden in 2015 and decided that we'd pick up a boat in Croatia and sail home for a honeymoon.
Yeah.
So coming down through the Pacific and you're in these most remote, beautiful places like the Tuamotus, which are just absolutely stunning and pretty much an island, that picturesque island of the azure waters and the palm trees over the water. But every beach was covered in litter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd find this litter and it takes you 4 days to find someone living there, but litter's just everywhere. And so when we got back, we actually wanted to do something about it. Like, you know, you can educate people as much as you like, but we've actually got to get it out of there. So we started
Not an easy task, yeah.
No, it's probably one of the dumbest things I think we've ever done because we're doing it at the wrong end.
Yep.
You know, it'd be better. Prevention's better than a cure. We all learned that at school.
Yep.
But yeah, doing what we do is pretty hard, and without our volunteers, we definitely wouldn't do it.
So just sorry, Joe, to jump in. Just back to the Pacific. All that rubbish, is it? Is that from the Great Pacific? What do they call it?
The
Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah, and so it's known where it's coming from. Like, is it third world countries? Is it the US? Is it Japan? What?
I think it's just everywhere, by
the way.
Well, effectively, like, there's actually 5 garbage patches in the world. All the different oceans have their own revolving waterways. So the South Pacific, like, they're actually getting rubbish from Australia and Chile and every island in the South. You know, I mean, we went to the Marquesas and we're educating kids out there and saying that your fish have got plastic in them. And they're like, no, our beaches are clean. And it's like, yeah, no, well, it's actually not your rubbish, it's ours.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's all cycling around and, coming from major countries. I mean, we all blame third world countries, but if you look at how much rubbish we pull out of Australia, it's pretty atrocious.
It is pretty atrocious.
I've got to say, many, many years ago, I did a trip down to the sub-Antarctic islands in the bottom of New Zealand and did a lot of walking around those islands. No humans on there at all. I mean, the Department of Conservation New Zealand made sure that that was never going to happen. But on the western coast of majority of these islands, and this is in 1996, is covered with plastic bottles and plastic. And this is 900 miles south of New Zealand in the Southern Ocean. And that's when I first experienced it.
Yeah, things travel in the ocean. We dropped in the 2008 Sydney to Hobart, we dropped a message in a bottle off Too Impetuous in Bass Strait. And a couple of years later, it was actually found at Lady Elliot Island on the weekend that the Brisbane to Gladstone was on. And they were on the boat sailing past it. And, it's actually travelled from Bass Strait to pretty much Queensland waters.
It was a homing bottle.
It was coming home.
I love it.
Drone.
I love it. So let's, the cleanup element is, as you say, for the listeners who don't understand, obviously in the oceans, the currents, and effectively in the Pacific, you can see it quite clearly, they basically circle around. So you effectively all the rubbish gets spun around and around and around and then ends up sort of centering. And that's why you end up with these piles of rubbish in the center of oceans. In the Southern Ocean, it's just going around and around across the bottom until it hits islands. And the thing about the islands in the Pacific is that they're basically like combs. They catch stuff and it ends up on those beaches, and that's why we see it. But you're saying, the stupid thing is trying to clean it up. The smart thing is change the way we do it. So, the plastic bottles don't exist at all. I don't think any of us have drunk out. I can't say I've drunk out of a plastic bottle for at least 12 years. That knowledge is starting to get out there. What can we do better?
I always say, we started this plastic bag ban of the flimsy bags. We don't pick them up anymore.
Yeah.
We banned the straws in Australia. We don't pick up plastic straws anymore. We have put in a 10 cents container scheme, we're still picking up bottles.
Right.
We last year, I don't have the numbers, but 2022, we recycled 15% of our bottles in Australia. And don't have the figure, but I think it's about, we manufacture about 65 billion bottles.
Wow.
So, and I counted and I counted and counted, and that's about 4 to 5 bottles a day per person in Australia, and that's too much. Obviously, we don't every human do consume that much, but it's just so much out and from hotels to, the classic example on the race yachts that you have plastic bottles on that take 2 sips out of it and then they put it somewhere and don't know whose bottle it is, and the end of the day you have like 20 bottles with 2 sips drinking out of it. It's getting better. The most yachts doesn't have that anymore, but it's just so much in production. So
it's also force of habit. I mean, you know, like there's a lot of, you know, convenience. Modern humanity has become very convenient. We're going through this with a lot of things. And that's the problem we've got. We're trying to slap down convenience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing that we need to understand how much we are producing. Since the 80s, the population of the world have nearly doubled. So we have much more people that are much more convenient. So around the world, we are consuming a lot. And it's not millions, it's billions. So it is. And if we don't stop it at the source, like we're saying, we're picking up rubbish here in Southeast Queensland. Every year we pick up about 185 tons of rubbish that comes from our cities in just Southeast Queensland. Guess how much we don't pick up? So we have to stop it at the street level before it goes that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a very infamous place called Port Klang in Malaysia. I don't know if you've ever been there. That to me was the most disgusting place in the entire planet that I've ever been to in terms of rubbish. And it's not like it's just not taught. It's just, oh, here we go, bang, throw it away. You know, that's how it is. It's just, and it's not changing there in those areas. That's the problem we've got.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we did our trek through the Pacific, we called it Plastic in the Pacific was our tour. Like, we always do something with a message. We were basically working out that in the Pacific for years they've been drinking out of coconuts. They crack a coconut open, have a swig and throw it over their shoulder. Mm-hmm. But now they do that with plastic bottles because that's what we've done as a society.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. Interesting.
It's really hard to go in and blame countries that for so many years haven't had the infrastructure because they have done they've had vessels that are natural. So they don't have the infrastructure.
Well, they've had the convenience thrust upon them, and now they're just doing what they usually do. Yeah, yeah, I understand that too.
Yeah, exactly. we should know better in Australia, though, because we have the infrastructure to take care of rubbish.
Yeah, I can't believe, like, how bad we actually are in Australia. Like, from an educational point of view, you'd think, I mean, 185 tonnes of plastic, or you're getting in Southeast Queensland, like, it just blows my mind, like, why are we not educated enough? Like, who actually throws it in the water?
The education side, well, it's laziness, to be honest. Like, you know, we go up and we're cleaning Gari, like, or Fraser Island, for everyone who doesn't know, it's a traditional name.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, even things like, you know, your beer cans. And, you know, that great advert from, you know, Great Northern, you know, the beer from up here. And we nicknamed it the beer left up here because they're everywhere all over the beach, like having their swigs and, like, you know, just tossing them.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know, that was their real slogan, the beer left up here. And it just gets laziness and just don't care. And look, I'll never understand it, never will. But an education only goes so far. Like, the majority of people are really good. And we kind of look at the upper-class society is actually really bad with litter because they produce so much and expect other people to do something about it.
Yeah.
And lower class don't care because, like, they really just don't have they're just trying to live right now. Cost of living is stupid, you know. They don't really care about the environment. Middle class is actually pretty good. So, you know, let's stick to the middle class.
Yeah.
The middle class.
it's one of the big, maybe you guys can help us with that. It's one of the biggest things that I think about, like, how do I get, we obviously care because we live and work on and play on the water. How can I get people in the cities that have no connection to the water to care for it? How can we get everyone to, like, I shouldn't do that for my kids, or I shouldn't do that for the animals living there. I don't know how to reach through to them.
Yeah. Marketing campaign's going to be the best one. Some sort of TV ad, it's what I reckon, where you follow the cycle of a bottle where it's dropped in the street and how it gets into the water. That's the only way I can think of doing it. We haven't talked about Jaybird yet. I want to bring it in, but before we do that, we have to bring it in on this point, in that can we announce the discussion with the partnership with the sales? Can we talk about that? Is that
absolutely. We'd like to bring World First to Barcarati.
World First.
I know you like an exclusive.
Here we go.
Known. We haven't released it. There's been no press release about it.
Let's go live.
I can actually give you two.
Two world firsts.
Soil sales have been a
I've only got, well, I've only got one drum roll on recording.
Talk over the guy while he's trying to do a world first. Let him talk.
Go I was just talk. Saying, I've only got one drum roll.
Drum roll it?
Yeah.
No, don't put that on.
Drum roll?
I've got it somewhere. Hang on. I've got to find it. Just go and I'll bring it in halfway through.
Add it later. Yeah, so Doyle Sales, we've had a partnership with them for quite some time. Even when I sailed around Australia in 2010, did it with Doyle Sales. And we've always been loyal to our people. And when we're looking for new sales for our boat, Shane from Doyle Sales Sydney and Charles from Doyle Brisbane, were just amazing. Like, the service to us was amazing, but also Mike Sanderson from Doyle International got involved. And the relationship's just been developing. And not long ago, I had a look at their website about sustainability, and they were planting a tree for every sail sold. And I was like, how does a tree relate to sailing? Like, I mean, okay, in the old days, they probably made masts out of them, but we don't see too many timber masts these days. So I suggested to them, like, that we look at a plastic offsets program. And there's something new that's coming into our world. We've got carbon offsets and some companies. I mean, plastic's not a bad product. It's just badly managed. But we need our plastic sales. All of our sales are all plastic. We've got to understand that. There's no option for it at the moment. So for every new sale that you buy from Doyle around the world this year, they are committing to removing the equivalent of 1,000 coffee cups from the ocean.
Right.
So there's your exclusive.
For every new sale. So if you get a
every
full...
Every new sale, no matter where it is, no matter what size it is.
So if
I've seen that Doyle's truck back up at their loft in New Zealand. That's a lot of cups.
Yeah, that's a lot of
yeah,
cups.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, coffee. They're talking about, I think the other day they were saying they're putting out around about 75 tonnes of sales.
Right.
I don't know how much that actually equates to in sales. But yeah, it's a fair commitment. I mean, we've seen people trying to use sustainable materials, but to actually make a commitment to cleaning the playground that we're playing in, it's amazing. And yeah, I think it's going to really be a big thing for them.
I do have to say, I can see that picking up a lot of coffee cups is going to really cut into Moose's cherub sailing time with his kid. So, you know, let's stop dropping coffee cups so he can keep sailing, because I know what it's like not to be able to sail because you're busy. So, yeah, but no, that's one way, isn't it? That's part of the marketing. It's a simple way. You know, I do have to say, I feel like the yachting fraternity is pretty good at doing this sort of stuff. Because we're in the middle of the water, we see it. So I guess that's the other thing. But at least it's the sign of change, you know. And another classic example is, I can't tell you how many production boats are being launched now with new resin systems that, you know, once you heat it up, it goes back and, you know, that full circular manufacturing scenario where you've got your fibre back and you've got your resin back and you can reuse it, you know. It's things are happening. And I feel like sailing leads the world in everything. I think we're the greatest sport that's ever existed, and the people that exist in the sport of sailing are the greatest human beings on the planet, and therefore, you know, high five to all of us, you know.
Well, and we get to sail around with the biggest billboards in the planet as well, that move from port to port, and that's the best way to tell the story, right?
And in one of the biggest races in Australia, the mighty Brisbane of Gladstone, that's what you'll see on our sails.
Oh, yeah.
So, come Good Friday, you'll see a slogan from Doyle advertising that basically our sail will have removed that equivalent of 1,000 coffee cups. But you'll also see the other one that I've got for you is this week, Boat Names Australia. Chris, down in Tasmania,
right,
did the logos on our boat for the Around Australia stuff, done every logo on our boat. They're committing to removing 7 times the plastic he consumes in making boat names.
7 times? Okay.
So if you want to need a boat name for your, you know, your Opti through to your Maxi, get on to Chris at Boat Names Australia, and he'll be helping us clean the waterways as well.
Okay. All right. So...
Can I just... Sorry, Jordan, to jump in. Okay. So... equivalent in the coffee cups, Boat Names Australia 7 times, and you guys, what's the actual operation? Yeah, sorry, Annika, go ahead.
So we do. We have a couple of boats and a couple of trucks or cars that we drive around. You launch the boat, you drive out, and you go into the mangroves and the mud, and then you start getting go and pick up rubbish. So you do about 1,000 squats a day, and getting it back onto the boat and then to the tip.
Wow.
Trying to reuse and recycle what we can. Obviously, the plastic is too contaminated for the most of it, so it goes to landfill. Metal and tires and all that getting reused. But yeah, it's a lot of manpower by squatting and
muscle. Wow.
Okay, it's just wide muscle.
Yeah.
Manpower. I mean, cleaning up after ourselves. Unfortunately, we clean on a commercial scale because we're littering on a commercial scale.
Wow.
But in particular, the cleanups for Doyle, you'll see us. We're planning to actually do it late day of Hamilton Island Race Week.
Yep.
To do a massive cleanup on Shore Island or yep. some of the south facing shores. And then we're also looking, because we run Ocean Crusaders in Sweden. So the program over there, we're actually going to do something with Phil Robertson Racing and Doyle Sales over there, which is the mighty Kyle Langford. Yep. So we're doing a massive careful, cleanup over careful, in Sweden as well.
Kyle, he'll break it.
Where the other cleanups will be.
I love that. I love that. So you've got the seagull doing the cleanup in Sweden, you know, like, and you know, seagulls are automatically picking rubbish up anyway. So Kyle's in his element. So that's perfect.
But just watch, he doesn't break something.
Break your
door. We'll make him clean up 10 times what he breaks.
That's the third one.
So, before we jump to the J-Bit, how do you pay for all this? Or who's paying for it?
Look, a charity is just like any other business. We just can't take profits out of it. To be honest, how we afforded Jaybird was Annika was involved in quite a serious accident quite some time ago and did all the nerves in the back of her neck. So, yeah, that's how we afforded Jaybird. No money from, you know, the charity goes to Jaybird at all. That's our own. We don't have kids.
That's an expensive part, the kids.
Yeah. And we bought Jaybird for 30 grand.
Yeah, sorry, I was reading this. I actually did read the run sheet, Jay, and I was reading this, and we're going to go into that into a minute. But I mean, financially, obviously, this sort of thing and it being a charity, it's a massive commitment. I mean, this is something that probably a lot of people don't understand is the commitment that's involved here. How do you motivate yourselves other than the ocean and other than the cleanup? I mean, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, oh, you know what? I've had enough. I just can't do it anymore. I can't beat this superpower of rubbish. How do you keep motivated?
The amount of times we have those days is stunning. But to be honest, it's our volunteers. You know, we get these people coming out on our boat. So an average day for us, like, I was going to load up, you know, we got a 13-ton crane truck, a 7-meter landing barge, you know, it's big equipment. But I'll go out on the boat, but I'll have five volunteers with me. And their enthusiasm and passion, and especially when you get someone new and they come out and they're making a difference, it wasn't for them motivating us, we'd probably, you know, there's been times when we've come home and when it was the end of the world, like down in the Cooks River in Sydney earlier this year, and if you met us at the shops that night, you'd think that our lives were going to end that night. It was just horrendous what we'd seen. You know, people putting animals in bags, and it's just unbelievable. And we came home so depressed. And the next day we had amazing volunteers with us, and they lift you up, and like, you know, we see kids like going and cleaning and doing something, and they just inspire you. So, but for me personally, I just go back to those turtles. The image of those turtles looking at me like and going, why the hell have I died because of your convenient plastic bag?
I mean,
and it probably was an
unassuming question that turned into probably the most important point, you know, keeping motivated. And having people like you on the planet is a rarity. I guess that's a really important point. I mean, most of us are so busy doing, you know, whatever we do. And it's probably 98% of the people on the planet. You know, I'll put you guys in a in a 2% category who actually do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, and that's why things like, you know, this Doyle program and boat names program are really important, because funding's essential. The amount of time, you know, we have to spend chasing funding, like, you know, from grants, corporate sponsorships, whatever. You know, if the money was just put in our account and we can do what we do best, our life would be so much easier. But a typical day, you go out and it's an 8-hour day. Like, you know, we do 5 hours on the water, but I've got to get the stuff to the tip and clean the boats and the trucks and all that. And then I come home and then I've got to chase grants. You know, I mean, our biggest year was after the Brisbane floods in 2022. Mm-hmm. We did 278 ton. That's 100 ton more than we've ever done in any year previously. And if you want to go and compare that, you know, a plastic bottle's 8 grams. So, you know, it's a lot of rubbish and it's a lot of hard work and it actually hurts.
Yes, yes, no, and totally respect that. That's my point as well. It's not only the mental energy that's involved in it, it's the physical energy, and that's probably where we need to promote the volunteer side of things and see, you know, see what can happen there.
Yeah, volunteers, and then we had through all this, like the last 3 years, we have been going because we're looking forward to have Jay Bird on the water, and that was our goal. So actually, after the first Hobart we did with her two-handed, and we had her on the water, that's when we actually crashed.
Yeah.
It was very hard after that to come back to motivate and get the mental part, get you back in business, because then we have done it.
We'll put your details, we'll put the Ocean Crusaders details up at the end of this episode. I think a lot of people will be pretty impressed by the conversation that we've had so far. I do feel like we have to talk about the boat, the racing side of it. First off, congratulations on naming your boat after my wife, the Jaybird. Jaybird 3, I've only had one wife.
I thought this was the absolute setup of all. Last week it's a 505 photographer. This week it's about a boat called Jaybird. What have we got next week, hey? Thinking a challenge.
But you know, the beauty of this boat is it was one of the original TPs that was built, I think, in the first three. So I think boat number two, yep, I've just got the signal for Annika. Obviously it looks fantastic. You bought it for 30,000. You guys have done a ton of work. It doesn't...
30,000 Australian dollars. Let's just confirm that.
Yeah. But the other thing, it's like I was looking at the photos of it. It doesn't look that far from a modern Swan, you know. Like, you've made it look gorgeous. Yeah, I saw
like
that.
a club Swan, maybe?
Yeah.
Like a Club Swan, maybe?
Yeah, just a lot like a Club Swan.
Yeah, funny about that. when we bought it, Alan Andrews design.
Yep.
The start of the TP52 class was three owners got together, wanted to do the Transpac together, and they built the first three boats. Rosso was the first one. It ended up being sailors with disabilities sitting down in Geelong.
Yep.
We got J-Boot. And then... V5, Victoria 5, sitting over in New Zealand. They were the first three boats, so pardon me. But we went back to Alan Andrews, and being a normal-sized person and wanting 6'8" headroom in a boat so I could actually stand up, we had this concept of what we wanted, and the boat that we really loved the most was actually that Club Swan. And so we actually gave him, okay, this is what we want. And he came up with the design.
Well, clearly he nailed it, because that's what I saw. So well done.
Yeah.
Sorry to talk over you, Annika.
No, that's fine. Wait, bike karate is all about that, isn't it? when we sailed across both the Pacific and the Atlantic together, every day wake up and I was like, imagine doing this on a faster boat. Imagine doing it on a production boat. As soon as you hit 8.5 knots, you have to reef, otherwise the boat is going to collapse under you. and when we sailed into Antigua, next morning behind us is Rambler. And you just go out there like, this is so nice. Very nice lines and the colour and all that stuff. So between a Club Swan and Rambler, that's how the design of Jaybird
comes. I think the other one was Invisible Hand over in New Zealand as well. We really loved the chamfer on the bow.
Yeah.
So we used that to actually lift the bow height a little bit more so it didn't the coach house didn't look too steep and too home built. Yeah. So But he was amazing, like Alan Andrews. Like he was so passionate when we got the boat back, and he's like, "Oh, I can play with my old baby." It was like, getting his kid home and talking to it again, and he's just so passionate about it. It was really cool.
Well, I mean, you're pretty smart if you can buy a Swan for a boat that looks exactly like a Club Swan for $30,000. Obviously, it didn't cost you $30,000 because I'm guessing when you buy a boat for $30,000, she's not. You know, a 52-foot yacht for $30,000, she's not in perfect nick. Now, I have seen a quote where somebody suggested you pay $29,500 too much. Is that true?
No, because the hull, the keel, the winches, the mast, everything was perfect on it. It was just a deck.
Oh, the deck was just rotten.
They hear it.
Perfect. Yeah.
There was just a deck.
So that's okay. So you paid $15,000 too much.
No way.
Yeah. This man here loves going up with a grinder, and he just started cutting the boat apart.
Yeah.
And very scary. Yep. So then we I tried to don't touch the hull, don't touch the hull. And we didn't know anything about boat building at that stage. I should probably have built a surfboard or something first, but I didn't. Start with a 52-footer, why not? Luckily, Alan Andro got to talking to Gurit, and the engineers over in New Zealand, the Gurit, actually built the boat from the beginning. So they had all the drawings. So when we sent over the new deck plan, they did the front of the boat in panels.
IKEA flatpack.
Yeah.
Yep.
All Swedish.
Don't lose the Allen key, Tomo.
Keep all the Allen keys in the top drawer.
Yeah. So that come out, and we built that in the shed first on a plug, and we put that on the front of the boat, and it was perfect. It was amazing.
Wow.
Perfect. We couldn't do that with the back, so that was all recoring and doing it the hard way.
When she says we couldn't do it, we couldn't afford to do it.
No.
So we you know, it wasn't a cheap exercise, but worth every cent. You know, to get a 250-kilogram foredeck, and we're talking from the companionway all the way to the bow. That's all the bow weight, all made in these 3 9-by-2-meter panels that were shipped from New Zealand. All the strong points for winches were already in the deck. It was pretty phenomenal, what they did. Made that phase of the boat a hell of a lot easier, so we didn't have to make a plug to make a deck and all that. So,
easier for him, because then I had to go and tape it all and make bags everywhere. So that was not the easy part.
Well, I guess how did it end up that you ended up being the boat builder, Annika?
You got good at it. I didn't.
yeah. Never do a bad job well. Is that what you're saying?
I got the patient.
Yeah.
We work in a very different pace. If it takes more than 10 minutes, he's out the door, and I can figure it out and spend hours on it.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now we're going back to Ely Beach times. The personality thing.
Ely Beach.
There.
Okay. Island time.
I love it.
Yeah, look, when we started trying to do any sort of vacuum bag, we were trying to do it together, and we couldn't get anything to seal. It was ridiculous. I'm still at that point, and Annika could probably vacuum bag this ball. She's just got so good at carbon work, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yes, I'm still an amateur, but I love it. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I agree.
I think boats apart with an angle grinder is fun.
Yeah. Well, you're a perfect combination. There you go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Absolutely. Just south and north pole, eventually it clicks.
Yeah, to go back to the day that we inspected the boat, when I first saw it, it came up for $30,000, and I sent an email to the agent going, I think you forgot a zero.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, oh, no, it's in pretty poor shape. So we go down there on a 42-degree day down in Sydney, and it's sitting in pit water on a mooring, been sitting there for 7 years. Bit of an ownership dispute. We walk out there and nearly fall through the deck because Balsacor just, and being one of the first TPs, I'm guessing they moved a whole heap of fittings around to optimize it, and they just didn't seal it properly. Sikaflex zip ties and electrical tape holding boats together forever in the Whitsundays. And then the funniest part about it, though, is we went downstairs and we knew that there'd been some water in the boat. And we're both, like, you know, as you said earlier, like, we're both skippers, you know, commercial skippers. We're sitting there looking at the Yanmar engine trying to find the dipstick.
Oh.
I'm like, we're going round and round this thing and, like, can you see it? We just thought we'd gone crazy. I gave up, sat at the nav table, said, found it, and the sump sitting on the nav table. I put the hand underneath. The whole bottom end bearing was pretty rusty, and, the high tide mark was about halfway up the flywheel. So we knew the engine was stuffed too. So.
Right. Wow.
So at which point the whole renewable side came into it, was that the intention from day one when you got the boat, or it kind of that was – something that progressed throughout having the boat and getting itchy and backbagging everything down?
I can't recall having that thought myself. So I think that was actually you that come up with that concept. But it all makes sense when we did it. Because she's, especially now after we sailed it, because you go out in 4 or 5 knots and you're doing 4 or 5 knots. You don't really need a motor for that. Be able to be out there and don't spend any money on fuel, don't have the fumes on board, don't have the noise. It's amazing. Like, nowhere sell this boat, I don't know, over 7,000 nautical miles in the last 2 years and not used a drop of diesel.
I love it. So you don't need that. You don't need that dipstick anymore.
No,
none of that. No, you got no oil carried, you got no fuel carried. It's great.
Yeah.
It must have been, it's almost like a blessing, you know, like you're doing this refurb of a boat, which again is you know, that's recycling existing materials. But then the fact that the engine was stuffed, it was a perfect scenario where you can go, okay, let's make this electric, and you're at that right time. Like, you guys are on the front edge of electric engines, but it definitely exists now. So, you know, it's almost like a gift for you that, oh, well, that was no good. Let's do the electric thing.
Yeah, look, one of the thing is, one of the biggest changes we did to the boat was move the companionway back probably about 2.5 metres.
Right.
So TP52, standard racing boat, the stairs come down and over the top of the engine. So we wanted to open the boat up to give it a little bit more dancing room. Pretty much by removing the engine from under there and putting it in behind the next companionway, gave us that opportunity. But we wanted something smaller, and then we learned about these Belmarine engines. We looked at the ocean vaults, but being commercial skippers, we wanted commercial reliability. And Belmarine, through Eco Boats, Steve Mully down in Sydney, he just was great with it. They got us, you know, a very small discount, but they did support us from Belmarine. But the greatest thing about this electric drive is when we want to service it, I literally plug my computer into it, get on WhatsApp to, Bart over in Denmark, in Holland. He dumps on my computer, it takes over, recalibrates everything, and it's done.
Wow.
That's how we service the boat, if we need to, but he hasn't touched the boat for over a year now.
Wow. That sounds cool. That sounds real cool.
But he's trying to find a diesel mechanic.
It does. It does. How does it sail? Even. Sorry, BP.
The boat?
Yeah, what's it like?
What are you doing? Oh, first time we put sails up, we were sold. And I'm like, being a 60-kilo female, sailing that boat, I can actually do it, even if we're blowing 30 knots and we have full on, because I can still hold the boat upright, not like a Beneteau that you have to hold on for dear life and have put the string to another person. So no, we love it. And we literally after half an hour, we knock each other off the, like, my turn. No, yeah. She's great. We just have to learn how to sail her faster and getting more comfortable with her. And that's the thing. Like, it's, you know, the biggest thing is with her, she doesn't load up and then take off. She just takes off. Yeah. The more sail you throw at her, you're happier she is.
Yeah. You talk about a comparison to two Hobarts. Like in 19, we did it on a Beneteau 40.7. It was called Ocean Crusaders Dodgeball, OCD for short. Annika was trying to steer in 20 knots on that thing, and because of her neck issues and all that, she couldn't steer for more than 20 minutes. So, you know, progressed down the line, 2022 Hobart, doing two-handed on a TP52. And seeing Annika in, and that was a big one. That was one where we had 35 knots and big seas off, you know, downwind. And seeing Annika able to handle the boat and that, it was so rewarding. And it's a point shoot boat. You point it at a wave and it goes, yep, that's my wave, and goes for it and takes off, and it picks up more waves than you think. So we understand why TP52s are a really good size and why they win a lot, because they're just that perfect size for surfing worms.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Go on, boys.
Power production and compliance.
Yeah, this is, I wanted to touch on this because same point.
Like category two or one racing and stuff like that. How's that minefield been for you?
It was actually a very long minefield to get through. And
I can vouch for it.
The former Barcaradian was a huge help. Will Oxley was a huge help for us in this space. I've known Will pretty much since I sailed around Oz, and I remember him coming up and saying g'day to me in the bar at CYC, and he's like actually gone out of his way. I, you know, didn't know me from a bar of soap, and said, love what you do. And just the respect, and we've learned a lot from him. But the rules, you know, the special sailing regulations didn't cater for electric boats.
Correct.
And initially they turned around and said that what they're going to do is they're going to give us an exemption because world sailing, offshore sailing regulations actually did cater for electric boats. And so we were asking Australian Sailing to implement all world sailing regulations so that we could actually race. And the biggest thing was every drive had to have an exhaust and a, you know, a permanent fuel tank, basically. But our fuel was batteries, and they didn't take that into account.
Correct.
So eventually we got them changed, which was really great. You know, working with Australian Sailing, we made that happen. But as part of that, we also, the minimum speeding, steaming time changed as well. It used to be 8 hours, and it moved down to 5 hours in a Cat 1 race. And that really helped us out. But in an offshore race, we do carry a backup generator. Because we can't steam on battery power at hull speed for 5 hours.
Yeah.
We can cover the same distance. It just, you know, like an electric drive, the power band is massive, you know, like down low, and then all of a sudden as you go up, it's just battery usage goes way up. So we had to have a generator on board that could generate power and all that. But that generator, I think it might have done maybe a minute of runtime now, just making sure it does start when we, if we ever need it. But yeah, we can get around about a 50, 60 nautical miles out of our battery bank.
That's very cool.
How long's the charge on that? So we, you know, how do you do that? I mean, what is it? I mean, from the layman out there, I mean, obviously, electric engines are new to yachting and this, you know, they're still quite an expense. What is it? How do you charge it? What does it take to charge it?
So the way we've set our boat up, we do have a 12-volt electrical bank as well, which runs all the house systems, electronics. We wanted to keep them separate because obviously a sailboat relies on its sailing instruments more than an engine most of the time. So we have all the solar on the deck. We use Solbion flexible solar panels, which you can walk on, and we got 9 of them on the deck, so 1.1 kilowatt of solar power going directly into the 12-volt bank. We run all the sailing, autopilots, refrigeration, everything you'd normally have on a 12-volt boat. But then we got a 48-volt bank, which runs the electrical drive and also all our cooking. So an induction cooktop, what I like to call the tuckafucker, microwave oven. you know, so that runs all that side of things. But we can actually regen off the prop. So when we're sailing, we can actually regen. Now we have a folding prop, and it's been a great program to go through with Bell Marine on how you get a folding prop to actually generate power under sail. Because its first thing is it wants to fold up. But we actually put an input into the prop so that it actually starts opening and turning. So it actually turns the right way. And then off that, they put a brake on it to actually generate power off it. Now,
you've got an electrical power that opens the prop up.
Yeah.
Righto. Okay.
And then we actually, yeah, so you put, we're putting in 250 RPM into it to open the prop up. And then they apply a brake to it. So we can't technically do that in a race, even though it would slow us down. When we're doing it, it takes about a knot of speed off the boat. But technically, we're propelling ourselves. But we've never
slower
used
than
it
you're going.
In a race. Yeah. We've never used it in a race.
No.
You know, we do the Sydney to Hobart twice now. And we haven't had to do anything. We haven't had to charge our batteries just before a radio skid, because that's all charged from the sun. Eventually, we'll have, when we go to cruising mode, we'll put wind generators on it. Just trying to find a regulator that will deal with the size of the battery bank we've got. But yeah, we're still working on this thing. It's never going to be finished, I'm pretty sure. But that's about. Yeah.
Are they
ever?
Yeah.
Nah.
As I said, it's something that I would love, and I looked into it and my project as well. And unfortunately, the price added an amount that was just not feasible for what we were trying to sell. That's what I would love to see. I'd love to be able to see. I mean, Volvo Penta now are doing a hybrid, and the hybrid for me. It seems a bit smarter and a bit more sort of easier, if you like, that it's a hybrid. I mean, it's probably going down that path. They're also looking at hydrogen. They're looking at all these different options. But there's got to be a way that boating can do this, because it's not like we drive, not like we use the engine 100% of the time. You know, it doesn't make sense.
Hydrogen is still a fair way away for being for the normal persons, because there's so many other issues with the hydrogen. So in the meantime, I think that the batteries and the electrics is the best choice. But yeah, a hybrid is better for any other normal yacht if it's not having a race hull. We understand that. Like we're having working boats, and I'm not going to say how many boats we got, but as we're working with, and the technology isn't there yet for us to go and pick up rubbish with electric boats and stuff. But if you have the yacht for it, and now we also know that we are not the top-notch racing yacht. We don't have canting keels. We don't have hydraulics running all of that. Everything is manpower on the boat.
But it's a standard yacht. I mean, you know, most yachts are equivalent to yours. Yours is probably in the upper level of performance. I mean, it's, you know, most yachts are a standard keel, a standard rudder, and a standard engine package. I mean, but what you've done is taken it to the next level. And what the industry needs is more of this and more of research into this. It needs these companies to look at what you guys are doing and saying, okay, how do we make this a production run? I mean, that's the key to it.
Yeah, it is. And it's the same as you're buying a electric car these days. You have to switch on a little bit in your brain. You can't just go and fuel up. You have to look for power stations and all that stuff. And it's the same with an electric yacht. You have to know how to charge them and when to charge them and have a little bit more thought about it. But we counted out if it's time for you to change your diesel donk in your motor and in your boat, it's about the same cost to switch over to electrics with the batteries and the motor, the drive. It's not a motor anymore, it's a drive. And it's about the same weight as well.
I think like one thing that we got to make clear, like, is we don't expect everyone to go and throw their diesel engine out tomorrow and go electric for the oceans. That's just a waste of resources. And the industry's not there. Like, we're setting, as you said before, like, you know, there's got to be research. And we've gone the whole hog because that's kind of who we are. We don't do things by halves. But, you know, to me, every race yacht that's built from today should have some sort of solar systems on them for charging their 12-volt batteries, because starting your diesel engine to charge batteries to talk on a radio in the middle of a race just does not make sense at all.
Well, I come from a mini world, and we ran ethanol and solar, you know. So yeah. You know, that's how we run. I mean, those little ethanol battery packs were phenomenal, you know. And I just don't understand why it hasn't been pushed more. And then you look at it; it's actually the big corporations.
Yeah.
Oh,
and now you.
There we go.
Shut it down, Jordan. Shut it down.
Shut up, you lefty.
No, no, none of that. Have you guys met Phil Sharp from, we call it Ocean Slab, but the Ocean Slab, I think EP202 from memory, but have you met Phil with his stuff? Have you ever talked to him?
No.
We should make the intro. He's a great guy, but it might be interesting because he's sort of on the same path with you guys.
He's going down the hydrogen path, isn't he?
He's doing hydrogen, but he does a lot of sustainability elements, but I think...
Ocean Slab.
Ocean's Lab.
Yeah, I got his newsletters after your episode with him. I stopped following him, and it's great to do. Yeah,
he's
a really
champion.
Good interview.
Oh, but he's a champion. No, Phil was good. He's a real he's our champion, and what he does is cutting edge. So we've followed it for sure.
I do want to say we've gone well over time, but I really wanted to keep this conversation going because I think it's a good one. There's a couple of things we do have to touch on. First off, obviously, as this goes to air, Brisbane to Gladstone's going to start. You're going to have the big logos on the sail. Can I just suggest that you should probably talk to one of the commentators for the race start so they know what's going on?
But
he's open to bribery as well.
Who's commentating on the race?
But let's get on to the important. Sorry, go, Annika, go.
No, you go first.
Well, I was going to move past this, but you can, if you want to put the boot in, you're allowed to.
Yeah, if you're going up to see us at the finish line, we do have rum bunnies there.
I was going to lead into this. So this is exactly where I was going. So go for it.
Yeah. So if you see us after the race, we do have the Lint bunnies there, and we do have because we love the Caribbean, we do always have the Mountgay rum on board. So we will, you bite the ears off the rabbit and then you fill it up with rum and then you just have one rum.
So I expect you guys to be doing this on Easter.
I can't believe Jordan's still behind the camera here because I thought he'd be breaking off doing it right now. He's got a stash. Well, actually, he probably doesn't have a stash of the Limp Bunnies because they would have all been gone by now.
But this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Rum bunnies. I've never heard of it before. And
this is fantastic.
So you bite the ears off the bunny, put a shot of rum in there, and, I mean, Lint chocolate's the real deal. She's good chocolate as a connoisseur of chocolate. That is very cool. You guys are very clever. You should get a Nobel Peace Prize for that alone.
Just that. Well, it shouldn't actually go to us. The tradition started back in 2008 on Tour Impetuous, Rudy Weber's boat, his old Ferrari, an old Holland 43, did the Admiral's Cup. On that boat was an Admiral's Cup boat. And it started there, and it's been happening whether the race or not. Everywhere, and I think it's something that the world should get on. And it'd be really cool one day to see, you know, Mount Gay and Lent sponsoring our boat during the race.
Just angles. There's angles everywhere. Angles everywhere, isn't there?
Can you imagine we could do this at the Caribbean 600? When you guys come to the 600 with us, like we plan to hopefully do that in the future as well on our bucket list.
I love it. Well, Bicey's there waiting for you right now. So
I'll go and see I'll go to the supermarket across the road to see if there's any Lint chocolate here for starters.
It's a Mount Gay rum.
Otherwise, we'll have to smuggle it in.
Love it.
Well, as long as you got the Mount Gay in there, give it that's got to be the way to go.
Plenty of that around. That's confirmed.
Okay.
That's good.
The other one is obviously, so Brisbane to Gladstone coming up. Best of luck. By the time when this goes to air, it'll be about a week out. It's Easter. It starts Easter Friday. And as we were joking, I'm doing the commentary. So tune in, live stream, and you'll be able to see the Jaybird 3 having a race at the start of the race. The other one, of course, that's important for you guys is your home turf. And one of my favourite little events is Ellie Beast Race Week. So you guys will be competing there, I'm assuming, because she's a glamour location to go for a yacht.
Yeah. If you go onto the wet Sundays in winter and leaving those cold and nasty places, maybe we can make a brisket up there too. Going to Ellie Beast Race Week, it's one of the most fun regattas because the accommodation's cheap. You can go to different bars. It's not just at the club, but the Whitsunday Sailing Club is the greatest sailing club in the world. And they've done so much recently up there. There's new buildings. There's more space to accommodate, basically half-drunk sailors. magnificent sailing around. We posted a photo this week of us last year, and I hadn't even seen it, but there's three whales swimming across our bow, and a big drone shot from Andrea Francolini. Yeah. Where else do you get? And if you're going to go up there, you might as well do both regattas, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
This week they're announcing their major sponsors, so that'll be an exclusive for you next week, right?
That's right. I've got that written down. You're very good on the sponsors. And before that sort of is a nice little lead into something, but before we do that, I do want to point out, boys, I don't know if you've noticed, we did say that Tomo is a regular-sized guy. Annika, just sit back next to Tomo for the boys. Just sit back a bit there. Right, now look at that. That man could probably take me on in the big head conversation. He's got a proper-sized head. Look at it. You have to get custom-made helmets like I do, or what? I think it's just...
When you got a brain, this thing, you don't need a helmet.
All right. Now back to... go on, boys, go.
No, I'm stopping there.
All right.
Leave it alone. Yeah,
so before we end up this conversation, and I suspect we might get you guys back because there's plenty more to talk about. BP, you just be sitting down here. These two wonderful people that we've been talking to all morning, afternoon, evening, depending on where you are on the planet, have come up with a whole new reason why Radix Nutrition is critical for your sailing experience, and we hadn't considered it, and it's going to give us the shits that we didn't think of it. Annika, do you want to tell us, or Tomo, one of you guys want to give us why you guys use Radix?
Yeah, we do, and it started, I'm a celiac, and a pretty serious celiac. It's one crumb chucker. I'm not seasick, but if I sniff a piece of gluten on the boat, I'm out for 24 hours. So
never good to lose your skipper.
No.
So it'd be really hard to I always been worried, like eating rice and tuna when I go sailing offshore, to get all that nutrition in it. And I'm a grown up with as vegetarian and all that stuff. So I know my nutritions. So before the Hobart, when we did it two-handed, I was like, we don't have time to cook. We just need to sail this boat. So I find Radix, and I was like, this is heaven for me. So I bought up half a room full of food from them, and, it have been great. I can go out and know that I can finish a tough race, and I would not be hungry, and I fueled up. It's so good. It's a life changer, actually.
It's incredible stuff. If I had it back in 2010 when I sailed around Australia, I wouldn't have lost 14 kilos.
Yeah,
correct. because you're just trying to – I was eating four meals a day just like young Xavier, lost a ton of weight because nutrition wasn't there. Yeah. But now it's easy. You just open the pack, add a bit of water, and there's your dinner and breakfast and lunch all in one pack. So, yeah, amazing product, and all credit to what they've done.
Mike Rudling will be happy with this episode. I'll give you the tip. I do want to say, it is a game changer. But just for all the competitors, the Jaybird, before a major race, if you start throwing bread onto the boat, that is rule 69. You're straight out. That's bad sportsmanship. So none of that behaviour, all right? Because that would be bad. But the whole concept of being celiac and helping with that hadn't even occurred. So, you know, for the general listener, maybe even less chance of getting seasick if you didn't know you had some elements of celiac. So, yeah, it's very cool.
And yeah, on this Gladstone race, we actually had 3 celiacs on board.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it's XR Ross.
And of course,
sponsorship opportunity.
It's on the jib.
Of course, like we got.
It's a good boat to be on. You know, dietary, like, you know, if you've got dietary requirements and you won't be sniffing diesel. So,
it is a good boat.
Very hard to get seasick on unless you're a proper seasick person.
And she drives to the waves you want. So, obviously, last year you guys were second across the line from memory on the Brisbane to Gladstone. It was the one in 20 years where you had to bash your way upwind. It wasn't a fun race. We're in full monsoon southeast trades at the moment. Let's hope they haven't burnt themselves out by the time Easter comes around. Because she would be glamour right now out there. You would be just smoking down to Gladstone. You'd be there in 15 minutes. That's what we're praying.
The race has always been.
Yeah, the way the race has always been.
Yeah.
Except for last year.
Yeah.
Let's hope. The weather forecasts for this year and it have not been what it's supposed to be ever.
Mm.
So,
who knows what we'll get.
So, yeah, it's a little bit out there, but hopefully everything goes well and we have a good downwind bumping race.
Yeah, I agree. Let's hope for that. I can honestly say last year I was very glad to be sitting in the commentator's chair. I do want to say, as a final sign-off, one, thanks for spending time with us. Two, I suspect that if you are in a marina or on an anchorage and you're near these guys, they would be more than welcome, amenable to you to come over and have a bit of a chat and learn about the setup or how you do the boat or about Ocean Crusaders, all those different things. Can you guys, if people do want to learn more about oceancrusaders.org, I'm assuming that's where people would contact you. Is that the best way to go about it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a Facebook page for the boat, JBird3, Roman numerals for 3.
Yep.
So jump on that and you can see all the videos. If you can't see us, you need to have a look over it. Before the Hobart last year, they did a really good walkthrough video of the boat. As you walk down the stairs, you basically run into a Perspex cover over the top of the battery bank, which no one likes standing on.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to stand on batteries, but it's all good. Nice cover over the top. Not the greatest weight-saving device, but it looks pretty cool.
And even better, boys, looks like we're going to be going to the Caribbean and doing some rum bunnies at some stage. So life is good for Barcarati.
Here, I'm going on tour now on the wares.
So Bice will have all the instructions on where we have to buy the gear, board, team. But thanks very much for joining us. Great chatting to you, Andrew and Tomo. Real eye-opener for all of us, I think, and I hope the listeners really enjoyed it. But, it was great fun from our end. Great to meet you.
Yeah, thanks so much. Just a final sign-off for us is everyone can play their part. Get those plastic bottles off your boat. Do everything you can. If you see rubbish, pick it up and do what you can to look after the ocean that we love and sail in and why we exist.
You hear?
Well done, Tomo. Thanks, Annika.
Well done, guys.
Thank you.
Nice. Pleasure.
Jordan Spencer.
Yes.
We'll talk about the discussion in a minute. But
okay.
You have the opportunity right now, well, for the Brisbane to Gladstone to give probably your second best commentary ever.
Oh.
Yes. Reminder for the listeners, your best commentary ever was there's a fin sailing a fin about to go to the finish. Yeah. So your next move is, this is the J-Dog calling the J-Bird sailing past the J.
Yeah,
if you don't do that, something's wrong.
Well, you know the boss of that whole show.
I'm Jay, and there's the J-Bird.
You know the boss of that whole show that we're putting together, and you are pretty good mate. So if I do get in trouble, I can blame you. So we're sweet.
Absolutely, 100%.
I love it. How good was that?
Intriguing, eye-opening.
I tell you what.
It's an iceberg.
It didn't even touch the surface. The amount of information that I actually want to try and get my head around all this, because electric engines and electric power and hybrid power and all this stuff for boats, unless you immerse yourself into it, you know what I mean?
The only way it's going to change if it's regulated, right? People make you do it. Otherwise, it's the easy option. But I think you're right, Jordan. As yachties, we're actually the good guys.
Most of us.
And we're the ones who need to keep telling the story and getting out there and taking part.
I think the biggest thing for me was when, you know, and you brought it up, it was actually my next question, Bicey, was the regulations for the Sydney to Hobart, because that's where most of our sailing, you know, sort of comes from, and you know what, how, and that the rules simply stated no electric engines. You know, that's what it was.
You're focusing in on one thing here, BP, just the engine element, but the whole clean up the ocean, plastic.
No, I'm just saying. Part of the reason why.
Yep.
You know, this isn't furthering quicker is because of things like that regulation, which meant that no matter what I did as a professional in, you know, choosing to go down this path to do a design or whatever, if I wanted to do a specific race, I couldn't do what I really wanted to do and have an electric engine. Mm. And that's how it is.
Mm.
So hopefully that's all changing because of these guys.
Yeah, and it will. It will.
And the thing, you know, I love the whole ocean, but I love the whole element of where they've taken an old boat, and you can go online and see the photos of what she used to look like and the work they've done, and they've turned into a very, very beautiful boat.
I did see it and have a look at it last year, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, it's credit to them, absolutely.
Absolute credit. And, you know, that, you know, to go cruising, obviously cruising a TP52 is not necessarily the easiest thing because they got quite a keel appendage underneath them. So, you know, that is one of the restrictions. But doing that, taking an old, beautiful shape boat, and obviously one that sails well, it's a great play. And they did all our work on Radix Nutrition for us. So if you are...
Yeah, you don't even have to do an advert.
They did the free ad for it. But if you do want to grab some Radix Nutrition on the back of that discussion, because I think a whole heap of people will, go to Radix Nutrition, the website, and just search Radix Nutrition. And then if you want a discount code, Barkarati is the discount code. You'll get a discount on us. So there you go. That's it. Very cool, hey? Should we move on?
Awesome.
Hard to move on after that one, I reckon, but there's plenty happening. Pit Water to Cost starts Friday, 22nd of March. So as this goes to air, it'll be Pit Water to Cost will be underway. We've mentioned the 76th running of the Brisbane to Gladstone. So their 100% is a live stream that you won't have to pay for. So if you go to YouTube or you can go to the Brisbane to Gladstone website, there'll be a live stream of the start. It's combined, the multis are in this year as well, so they'll get in coverage. The 505, leg one of the 505 Euro Cup. I know you boys are fired up about this. I saw a bit of banter going on.
Oh, absolutely. I can't stop thinking about it, to be honest with you. And I did raise a question earlier off air, Jordan, are red ones faster?
No, I've never seen a red 505 win anything. So it's probably the one place in the world where they're not faster. But I'm willing to be told that I'm wrong. But,
So excited about it.
Yeah. So the first leg of the Euro Cup starts in San Rafael. It's over Easter. Yeah. Four series event across France, Italy, Germany, and Poland. So good luck to all the people that have fallen in love. But those who aren't sailing 505s and sailing slower boats, The Trofea Princess Sofia World Cup event is about to start in Parma.
Love that regatta.
Yeah, it's a great one. 29 March through 6 April, so that'll be a good one to watch. Anything else we've got to mention? Obviously, where Bicey is, but we'll come back to that in hot time. Anything else, team, before I've missed?
No, I think that's all
we sort of touched. Sorry, boss, gone. We touched on it last week. Etchells obviously starts this week. There's a big hype going on at the moment about it all. So that's going to be exciting. Looking forward to that. Perth World Championships.
Yeah. More on that coming up.
In a sec.
Oh, sorry.
Reading the run sheet. You've got to read it before.
I haven't got that far down yet.
Obviously, the Jack Lloyd Listener of the Week is underway, and our great friends at Vicobia will be providing a $200 voucher to each month's best entrance or best contribution. Last week, we did the Croc Focus, boys. This week, I've done the Insta Focus. We had a couple, and I've shared them on the daily stories. Matt Price.
Got a few laughs back.
Yeah, Matt Price sent the Insta page where he's got all the defenders, the Land Rover defenders, chock-a-block in the garage. Definitely filmed on your you and Kalen's combined garage, was
the
it?
The funniest.
I'm glad I've added to this part of the show. One last week it was Crocs. This week it's
defenders. Yeah, it's all about you, boss.
And a bit
it's
of a
true.
Shout out to old mate.
You're an icon, Kalen
Pricey. Howard. Pricey,
absolutely. There's plenty of a defender in Antigua, just quietly.
Oh, is that right?
Is there?
So, yes, when it does rain, there's a slight all slick before you jump in with a few little jabs on the water. But, always good to see the banter.
I believe the caption came back saying this is defender heaven. Is that right?
No, there's no, you can never kill a defender.
And I said, the next phrase was, but none of them star.
Yeah.
And then I said, so that must be defender hell then.
Yeah. that was a good one. So Matt Price,
for the listener, if you haven't seen the photo, it's just hundreds of defenders of all sorts of shapes and sizes and colours, and none of them start.
Somebody shared, and I completely lost it. I was going to put it up, but somebody shared one with me where they showed some footage of a four-wheel drive at full noise going through the sand hills and just launched.
Oh, I did see that.
I was going to say, this is Bicey's driving style.
Bicey on his way to the cruising yacht club in South Australia.
Let me tell you, so sailing off the coast of Newcastle, and I think it's Stockton Beach just to the north.
Yes,
where those four-wheel drives are doing that sort of thing.
Exactly
and
right.
Last year we're sailing there on the SMB. We'll be up there in a few weeks, all week. Myself and Howard sitting next to each other on the rail, mate. We got to get back here.
Yeah.
We're doing that. We're launching.
Yeah. Right. You don't go swimming in the water just off Stockton, which I have done on quite a few occasions because you see fins all the time. The other one, of course, was Thomas Quick. And I've just published that one today, which is the dodgy boat names one. A bit of banter going around about dodgy boat names. It was average, but you know what? It brings up that banter about dodgy boat names, which is a great one. I think having a bit of fun with a name on a boat is great. Like the Jaybird thing was, trying to claim it as my wife's, named after my wife. But dodgy boat names, where they're right on the edge. Very fun. And I think we're more than willing to take contributions and suggestions on that.
What's
one.
Your fin called, Jordan? Have you got a dodgy boat now?
No, I have no. I haven't. What was it you were talking about? Oh, spilling meat juice during the week.
Spilling meat juice?
No. Yeah, no, we'll leave that. That was internal, Ben. But my dodgy boat always was. Was the bow movements?
Yes,
was Malaysia.
Yeah, bow movements. Yeah. That, I love it.
Well, we all know that there's different classes that take on dodgy boat names, and Sharpies are one of them. They have a big passion for funny names.
My favourite Sharpie name of all time was one I remember as a kid, and my dad had to explain it to me. I remember a Sharpie being towed past as we're heading back from the yacht club, and it was called Kangaroo Edward. And it takes
That's hilarious.
Yeah, well, when you work it out, none of you got it, have you?
No.
No. So what's the abbreviation for kangaroo? How do you shorten? No. What do you say when you don't say?
Roo.
Correct.
Rooted. Root.
Correct.
Yeah. Rooted. There we go. I like it.
Oh,
yeah.
Rooted.
I had the 10.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Well, that I don't think a lot of people, even our international listeners, will even get that one. But anyway.
Yeah. I like
it. Rooted. Kangaroo shortened is Roo. Yeah. Edward is Ted.
Yeah, and the best way to explain that in the Australian vernacular is you're stuffed. Yeah, things aren't going well.
You're buggered. Yeah. You're buggered. No, you're not buggered. You're just rooted.
Yeah. Things aren't going well. No. All right. Cool. Good. Thanks for the contributions. Cheers at Bar Karate. If you want to send anything to us, you can win that $200 voucher and, of course, all that fantastic gear of Vicobi gear, the performance sporting gear that you can utilise while sailing, which I do when I ever get to go sailing. It's been two cyclones since I've stepped on a boat, boys, so it's not easy. Anyway.
Not easy being Jay. Not easy being Jay.
Oh, you don't want to know. It's a hell week. Anyway, hang on.
It's hot time with Bice.
Very appropriate for where you're based, Bice.
It is quite hot. And if everyone can just imagine.
I think we should have.
I've got the rusty kit on just for hot time.
We should have re-recorded it. It's hot time with Bice, man.
Harry.
Harry, do it.
Fix it, Harry.
Boys, it's a little bit going on coming into Easter. So it feels a bit of a crossover between the seasons.
Yep.
We're slowing down Southern Hemisphere, warming up Northern Hemisphere.
Correct.
And obviously a lot going on in the Caribbean at the moment, a little in-betweener. But let's just take ourselves to Sydney Harbour for the Palace Capital TP Gold Cup.
Yep.
Time of recording, one day in, about to get off of their second day. Matador recently out of the shed. Caned him up, towed him up yesterday on rating-wise.
Yep.
So they've done some nice work there. The Matador, the XSMB,
Expo Jest,
blah, blah, blah. She's had a few lives, but well done to those guys with the Hooligan in second. So that's leg one of the Palace Capital TP Gold Cup.
So that was...
two being the IRC Nationals. In Newcastle weekend after Easter, so
yep. And that race was just the passage race, so it's Windward Lords today, Sunday. It's Sunday morning Australian time as we record this, so nothing's happened. But yeah, it'll be Windward Lords today, I think. So yeah, and it's
correct.
Just for those, as Bicey said, you've got the next one coming up. They do live coverage. If you go to their Facebook page, so TP52Oz AUS. So TP52AUS, and there will be some live coverage. I think Nick Douglas is doing that. So, that'll
go check it out.
Yeah, check that out. Yep.
Yep. All right, boys. Whilst we're in Oz, let's go across to the other side, Western Australia.
Mm.
We've just had, as mentioned during the show, just had the Etchell Pre-Worlds take place, taken out by good mate GT on Magpie, the Bill Steele Regatta. There we go, sorry. Laurie Smith second, Pagey on Hong Kong boat in third.
Yeah. The most Australian Hong Kong boat in the world.
Thornborough.
Absolutely. So, and we're just about to start rolling into the Worlds, which will be taking place pretty much day one racing when you're all listening to this. So go check it out. Plenty of coverage over all the different networks,
man.
Whether it's Etchell's page, Down Under Sale page, Fremantle Sale, all the pages,
no,
basically.
100% guarantee of no Fremantle Doctor at all. Shifty, it's definitely not like it's not normally like this. It's
not like the brochure.
No, she's going to be very,
it is the middle of March.
Yeah. Gradient breeze.
Yeah. So.
No one's just going to be banging left, is what I'm going to say. It's not going to work. So, yeah, you're going to have to be switched on.
And shout out, actually, to our mates in the initial regatta. The Bill Steele is Deuce, came in eighth. Deuce,
good effort.
Snowy and Jess, so well done to those.
Yeah.
We'll be 30, what are we, 40 boats or something? So keep a close eye on that. All right, boys.
And don't forget the drunken texts we've received during that regatta as well. So I expect a few more to come in. And apologies, I haven't replied to a lot of them, but thank you for the drunken texts that were sent. Appreciate it.
Keep the banter coming in.
Yeah, keep it coming.
All right, let's go back to Sydney Harbour, boys.
Yep,
all right.
Now, the 18s, they weren't finished as of time of recording last week, but they were very close. We had a day to go, I believe. But in the end, taken out by the Yandu. not to be confused with the Andu, which came in at third, previous reigning champions for that matter. And a stellar performance all by also by Rag and Famish in second.
Yeah.
So I know you're. Did you watch the wrap up of the?
I did watch it.
Last
I watched
day or
it,
so, boys.
I did watch it, and what I love is that actually we predicted it. So well done us.
Yeah. Pretty easy when you're coming into the last day. Did you call that horse race to the last couple of metres?
Well, that's how I place my bet. Isn't not how you do it?
All right. Let's jump over the Dutch bros.
The Dutch bros.
Oh, cuzzy bro.
Yeah. All right. Now, there's a bit going on here.
There is a bit going on. One. Yes.
What's going on?
Sal GP.
Sal GP, bro.
Came out this week. The Kiwis came out with their new name for the team. Did we talk about this last week?
We have not. We just predicted it. We suggested it and they copied it.
Episode 248, I believe, 1 hour 23 from memory.
Yep.
We spoke about, well, I specifically
was
spoke
it 249? About one of the two.
No, 248. The inventiveness of the Kiwis and their names. Starting with the obvious one, North Island, South Island. And I thought it would be a great idea to call the Cup team the, what did we say, the Falling Ferns?
Yep,
and
Falling
then we
Ferns.
We announced a few names around. Next thing you know, bloody 1 week later, the New Zealand Sail GP team have named themselves the Black Foils.
The Black Foils.
Black Foils.
Yeah.
So it almost covers both bases. They went for something not bad, but also something quite obvious.
Yeah. No, good on them.
So new team. Not bad.
I like it. Bad. I love it.
Well done to them. Of which takes us then to Sail GP in Christchurch next weekend. I mean, you'd expect the Kiwis to bounce out nice and strong. Pete's back on the wood. But so have you guys watched the Racing on the Edge series from the Sail GP?
No, I haven't, but I know where you're going.
Short of it this week.
I did watch it.
And at the end of the episode, Outeridge on his phone to his wife, and he has a big announcement to make. What do you think?
First off,
he's lost his Kiwi passport.
Looking at the weather models, not going to be as glamour conditions we had in Australia.
Is that what he says to his wife?
No. I just wanted to bring up the point that it mightn't be that windy. Anyway, but yeah, so mate, it's been the Outeridge Fest.
Oh, there he is.
Yep. Am I still there?
Got you.
It's been the Outeridge Fest on Sail GP this week. They're trying to do everything, so something's going on. And the gist is, you can read between the lines, is Outeridge is going to take over driving one of the teams for the rest of the year. That's what.
So
happening.
Someone else's wife is pregnant, basically.
No, there's a lot of babies being born.
Well, they're all in that age, aren't they? They're in the bracket.
Here's my theory. One of the skippers has gone, you know what? I have to concentrate on my Olympic campaign or the Cup. Yeah, it's one of those two. But I think I was going to guess the Olympic campaign because, our favourite skipper out of the whole lot, and I'm just guessing, I have no idea, even though some of you think I do, but I don't know. I wonder if the Schnitter, because he did really well in the 49er. He'd be racing in the 49er at the Olympics for Switzerland.
What we do have to admit is he's already used his card.
Schnitter's on the Swiss team. Confusing Eric Heil.
No, you're right.
Yep.
Yeah, no, okay, sorry, yep.
Yep. So, Sebastian, I don't know. That was my first reaction, but somebody, yeah. But it's going to be hard because these boats are so tightly team orientated. You know, to come in and jump on a boat.
Well, who else in the entire fleet is focusing on Olympics? Not there's not really anyone now, is there?
They're all oh, mate, America's it doesn't matter to me. All I know is Nathan has to buy a car with a massive back window for all the different Sale GP stuff. But yeah. He must have a lot of tracksuits.
Well, I was going to say, imagine the tracksuits.
The different team tracksuits.
So, oh, the imagine the tracksuits.
Good on. He's definitely one of the best out there. Yeah. And if he can get...
Well, he's just an asset, isn't he?
A long-term long-term ride. He's kind of like the Danny Ricciardo of the Sale GP world.
Oh, you know, that guy.
Bouncing between a couple of teams. Yeah. He's good enough to be in a team and actually win it. So good luck to Nath. We love it. And next week, we're probably a time of recording be mid, so we can chat a lot more about that.
Well, I'll see his wife in a few days, so yeah.
And then finally, gents, we're heading up to the Caribbean, man.
Caribbean, man.
St. Bart's taking part next week. 36 super yachts kicking around, racing around the island.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's 100% racing, 23% of the time.
No. So anyway, boys, so this is you. This is your week, obviously, coming up. You're excited, yeah, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm super excited, mate.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, yeah. No, we're happy to.
So how is running 43 people?
No, 46 currently.
46, wow. So they've yep. added three.
So
for our listeners,
including
okay,
the permanents.
No, can I build the picture here?
Our
mate Bicey is
it's a catch, boat, by the way.
Our mate Bicey is a boat captain on a 59-meter catch.
No, I'm not. Yeah, boat captain. Come on, that's
what are you then?
No, all right. So on, I thought I'd just be turning up, handing out the ice creams, making the coffees, blah blah blah. So I've
party pies,
managed to slip
party
into
pie
this,
handler,
slip into this crew boss role
in your Crocs.
That's cool. All good. But mate, don't worry about a thing. AI,
starting AI. What so is it on headsets? All on
got
headsets.
Got the comms set up. AI tapped into quite a few bar karate episodes to get the accent right and just get the droll right and chuck in the old F-bomb. And
so you just sit down the back of the boat, sit down the back of the boat in the spa.
Well, you got your computer out, Bice. Oh, don't worry about a thing. And then, all right, 5 minutes to go, just press play.
You're going
to
love it. I've got one for you, Bice. We've got, this is, your whole life has been working to this moment, Bice, because we have now, VB, Virtual Bice. He started the VB Express. Now it's there.
The Virtual Bice Express.
That started back in 1995 with the VB Express.
Oh, I think it was right. Earlier than that, mate.
But the VB, I love it.
No one's going to be able to tell me. Bicey down the back on the sofa, you know, leg up, arms on the staunchions, and you know, like just sitting back there with the computer. Full AI coming into a jibe, you know.
Can we
just what I do have to say, gents, is some of these vessels mind blowing. Just what it is, the community, the whole thing. Looking forward to getting to St. Bart's and actually
what an experience
these,
though, Bice.
Getting
I mean,
ships
I'm
fired up. It's going to
super
be
super excited.
Ships. Yep. So
super excited for you, mate. How cool.
So, can we there'll be winners and I don't know actually. We might be recording live from one of the races next week. So
that'll be the go. Can we use virtual
AI
Bice?
Sorting out the maneuvers, so you'll be right.
Yeah. Can we use Virtual Bice as a hosting role? Because he might be more reliable. He might be easier to get.
Jesus.
Fuck it. Let's just do the whole lot of us, virtual all of us.
I love it. So next week,
no more.
Our guest will come from the Caribbean, is what we're planning. So pressure on, VB.
Oh, must be a storm in bloody. Must VB. Be a storm in Malulabar.
No.
Pressure on VB for next week.
Yeah.
So
all right, good on you.
That's it for Hot Time, gents.
Love it.
Awesome.
All right, everyone. Great work this week. Love chatting.
Long
to
episode.
You. Great
sorry,
episode.
Sorry for that one.
Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoy it. Remember to send. Any ideas you've got to cheers@barkarate.com. And then, if you want your Radix Nutrition, type in Barkarate, one word, and you'll be glamour, especially if you're a celiac. Yeah.